This is a recording of the experiences and reminiscences of Mr. James E. Henson, attorney at law. The narrator is Mr. Henson, and the interviewer is Betty Turnell. This recording is being made at the request of the Decatur Public Library in Decatur, Illinois, at the office of Mr. Henson at 227 South Water Street in Decatur on January 26, 1984. Mr. Henson?
Yes, ma'am.
I believe you and your family have been longtime residents of Decatur.
All my life.
Can you tell us something of your background and your family and early life?
You're going to hold that. My father's name was James Atlas Henson. He was born in Shelby County in 1874. His family moved to Decatur in the late 1890s, and I was born of he and his wife, Clara Mae Morseland Henson, on the 27th day of June 1902, in a house which was located on a street in the southern part of Decatur named Polk, P-O-L-K Street, which is now abandoned and is in use as a part of a highway system for the state of Illinois. I was the only child of James A. Henson and Clara Mae Henson. We lived at a location on South Polk Street until I was about 5 years old. We then moved to the what was then the 900 block South Broadway. I attended first the Jackson Street School, which was located at the northwest corner of South Jackson Street and Sheridan Street. In the second grade, I was transferred to Riverside School, which was located on East Cantrell Street. From Riverside School, I was returned to Jackson School and finished the grades in Jackson School. From there, I was registered in a school which was called Departmental School, which was located at the corner of North Street and Broadway. And from Departmental School, I graduated into Decatur High School, where I graduated in 1921. At this point, I should tell you that there are no monuments left to my memory, since every building, every school building I attended has now been torn down. Two of the properties are occupied by housing projects. From Decatur High School, which I graduated in 1921, I entered Illinois Wesleyan Law School. This was a law school handled by practicing lawyers in Bloomington who were well qualified as teachers and well qualified as attorneys in court. In 1924, I graduated from Illinois Wesleyan Law School, and in that year, in the month of July, our class, along with other graduates from law schools in the state, took the bar examination in the city of Chicago, and later on we received, or a great number of us, received our notification that we had successfully passed the bar examination. In following the experience, we went to Springfield in the month of October 1924 and received our license to practice law, after which My father, who was a lawyer, brought my cousin, Martin E. Morthlin, who had attended all these schools with me, and we both graduated from Wesleyan Law School, took the state bar at the same time, and were admitted to practice. On January the 1st, 1925, we entered the practice of law with the law firm name of Henson, Morthlin, and Henson. The name Henson has been in the law field since 1907. My father died in 1935. My mother died in 1941. Mr. Morthlin and I continued to practice law in a building at 227 South Water Street, which my father had constructed, and we continued our firm until his death in the year 1935. And in 1939, Martin E. Morthlin became a candidate for county judge and was elected to that office. He followed to serve as a circuit judge, and in my opinion, made one of the finest judges that Macon County, Illinois ever had. I am still in the age of 81 and a half practicing on a limited basis. I think that gives you, I might say to you that I married one Eva Josephine Young on July the 15th, 1925. We lived together as husband and wife until the year 1979 on August the 19th when she departed this life. We had four children born to our marriage, all girls. One named Josephine died at birth. I have three living daughters. Their names are Mary Louise Snelson, Eva Joanne Lukenville, and Clara Eloise Peters. They all three are the parents of a total of 14 children. All of my grandchildren are alive. I have one granddaughter who is now practicing law in the state of California. All my grandchildren who are eligible to have graduated from college, with the exception of one. The others are on their way to a college degree. I think that probably gives you a fair amount of information about the Henson family.
Well, I think that's really an exciting and honorable career, and you ought to be proud of the contribution your family's made.
I'm very proud of my grandchildren. They're fine and courteous. They're gentlemen and ladies, and I can't sing enough of their praises.
That's a lot to say in these days.
Well, I can say it with pride. I must also say that the benefit or the credit for our daughters and their reputations belongs to my wife. She was the supervisor of our daughters, and she did a wonderful job, and I have many times expressed my appreciation to her for the kind wife and mother and grandmother that she made. I've been lost without her. She was my helper. I tell everybody she was my queen.
Mr. Hansen, you've told us that you really inherited your interest in the law from your father. Was this a natural interest on your part?
Very definitely. He wanted me to become a lawyer, and of course I grew up in that atmosphere. I should emphasize something else at this point. I have heretofore mentioned Martin E. Morslin, who was my cousin and a very, very bright individual. He and I grew up together. He was 1 year older than me. We grew up together and we were as close as two brothers might be. Our relationship, however, was that of cousins. We went through all our schooling together, and immediately after our schooling, as I've stated, we entered into the practice of the law with my father, who, when we went in, told us that we were going to be partners on the first day we entered the practice, that we were not going to be working for him, we were going to be his partners. That relationship continued during the balance of his life and beyond that till Mr. Morslin was elected judge, when that relationship terminated. Subsequent to his termination in the practice of law, his son Richard F. Morslin took up law, as did his son Donald W. Morslin, both of whom came into my office, and immediately upon their entry into the practice, they were by me told that they were not working for me, they were partners. And that partnership continued until Donald W. Morslin followed his father's footsteps and became elected county judge, and he is now a circuit judge and doing a very fine job in handling matters in court. Richard F. Morslin and I continued in the practice and subsequently took in T.G. Bolin as a third member of the firm, and our practice was under the firm name of Hansen, Morslin, Bolin. I go back to tell you that I was very much influenced by my father to become a lawyer. I had, of course, followed his thinking in a great many matters, and I felt that I was living with the law and would like to be a lawyer. I was very fortunate to have parents who were able and willing and anxious to help me in my endeavor to gain the right to practice the profession. So I must again sing their praises as being so helpful to me.
Your father must have been very farsighted to bring you two young men into the firm under those circumstances.
I think at the time that Mr. Morslin and I were taken in, and let me point out here, on the first day we were in the office, my father said to the two of us, he said, "Now you're both going to be treated the same." And he emphasized the fact that Mr. Morslin was more particular than I was, and he had learned that by observing us over the years. He stated in our first day in the practice that, now Mark, you are going to be the manager of the office, and Jim, you will be doing trial work. He never showed any preference between me and Mr. Morrison, and we associated in married life. Our families were very close with each other. He unfortunately died at an early age of 61. It's about the same age that my father was when he died. We had a very friendly arrangement, and we were very close together.
Well, that is really a very thrilling story. Now, when you received your training at Illinois Wesleyan, that school is no longer in operation now, is it?
I think that Illinois Wesleyan Law School, Mr. Morrison and I attended that because my father had graduated from Illinois Wesleyan ahead of us. He had gone, he was a bricklayer by trade, my father was. He wanted to become a lawyer, so he had not graduated from high school. He went to James Milliken University and took the necessary courses to qualify him as a graduate of high school so that he could enter Illinois Wesleyan Law School. He was elected, my father was elected to the Illinois State Senate as a senator from this district in the year 1904. He served in the Senate for 8 years up to 1912. It was during this period of time that he attended Illinois Wesleyan Law School and graduated and became licensed to practice.
When you went to law school, you went 3 years, I believe.
Yes, we were, at my time, we were able to go to law school for 3 years, directly out of high school and into law school. That is not the situation today. We had, as I mentioned before, practicing lawyers and very good lawyers who were our instructors. We went to law school for 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening, Monday through Friday, and 1 hour on Saturday morning, making a total of 11 hours attendance in law school. That continued over the period of 3 years. These practicing lawyers gave of their time as our instructors. That was the type of school that we had, and I think a great number of the graduates of Wesleyan Law School became lawyers. There were a few of them who were practicing lawyers in Decatur. Howard Helmick, who was a former partner of my father, was a graduate of Wesleyan. Arthur F. Gilhunty was a graduate of Illinois Wesleyan. Melvin Wright, who was a tax attorney, was a graduate of Illinois Wesleyan. Those folks are all deceased. The law school had a very high reputation over the state, and the classes were made up of men. We had one girl from Danville who entered law school when I did, but she didn't stay only a short period of time and went back to her home city. So our class was a class of men for the 3 year period. And there weren't any other women. We had three classes, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. I don't believe there was a woman graduated from law school during my 3 years there.
Now, you said your father told you that he thought you should become a trial lawyer. Was that where you spent most of your practice?
Yes, that is. I did a great deal of the practice when our firm was at full strength. Along with my father, he was a trial lawyer. Mr. Morrison, I should emphasize, was a very bright student in school. He was a very well-educated attorney. He had a memory that I always bragged about that I didn't have. He could remember the names and number of the books where certain cases were. He could remember names and faces. He had a great deal of ability that I did not have. However, we were able always to get along. I never had any difficulties in the practice of law as long as he and I and my father were together, or he and I after my father. So my early practice with my father and my cousin was certainly an enjoyable period in my life.
Now, do you think that you would call it your specialty would be the trial part of law, or did you have any?
Well, we were pretty much general practitioners, and you might have a certain amount of trial work. Eventually, a great many lawyers try over their period of practice to become more of office lawyers than trial lawyers. I always thought that the trial work was more difficult than office work. However, lawyers today, unless they completely want to specialize in some certain thing, and we don't have very many persons that could be classified as specialists in our Decatur Bar Association. I always felt that the practice of law and trial work particularly was a difficult procedure. However, being an office lawyer, you have to have the ability to go to the library, sit down and put in hours checking the law and attempting to find what you need to present to the court, and that isn't anything that's soft. It demands a substantial intelligence, and Mr. Morrison was an expert in that field. I don't mean by that he never tried any lawsuits. He did not care about trying lawsuits. He preferred doing office work, preparing instruments, and dealing in estate matters and things of that kind where there were no contests about them. Our system worked out very well. The way we sort of established ourselves in different fields. Then in addition to that, as I've mentioned, my father died at a young age. And prior to his death, he was incapacitated a great deal of the time. I want to tell you this as an experience. My father was ill, and he didn't want to show it, but we could, my mother and I could determine it, as could Mr. Morrison. And he had built the building that I now own, and then later on I put on a second story to the building. He was alive at that time. The building, first floor, was built in 1927. and we moved in late 1927. His health was not good. There were days that he could not make it to the office. Mr. Morrison and I went over to my home, over to our home, and talked to my father one time in reference to. We suggested that he just forget about the office, and that he and my mother, who I call Mom, just takes a car, and at that time it was a Model T Ford, and just roam around the country. I knew he liked to be out in the country and see the way other people live. His response to my suggestion that he do that was, "Jim, I'm never so happy as when I am in that office." And I told him that Mark and I would get him to the office if we had to throw him over our shoulder and carry him here. And he came until it was impossible for him to come, and he died in 1935. I keep bringing in my cousin Martin E. Morrison because I want to honor him as being a first, a wonderful student, second, a very good lawyer, and thirdly, an exceptionally fine judge. That's my belief, and he's been dead for a number of years, but I still miss him, and as I do miss my wife.
Let's talk a bit about changes in the legal system over the years. There have been a lot, haven't there?
There's been a great deal of change. One of the changes that I think of at the beginning is that when we came into the practice, Mr. Morrison and I, we had justices of the peace that tried and took care of all of the small matters, such as a lawsuit for $50 or a lawsuit for $150 or an arrest for disorderly conduct. And these justices of peace seldom were lawyers. We had a few that were lawyers. They did not receive a salary, as the judges do now. They received a fee from the cases that were before them. We had a police magistrate who his responsibilities were more to care for the minor violations of law, misdemeanors, and traffic violations, and that type of procedure. He likewise was on a fee basis. It was determined later on by the Bar Association that this was out of date. We ought to have lawyers taking care of all court matters. That has been good in a number of instances, and in my judgment, it's been bad otherwise. The salary of the judges in the circuit court, and incidentally, the county court, which we used to have, is no more. We have nothing but circuit court, and we have the circuit judges and associate circuit judges. Now the associate circuit judges now take care of all these small matters that I've talked about. If you have a claim against a person for $100, you go to the clerk's office and you can do this individually. You do not have to have a lawyer. You can sign a paper and call a complaint, and said if the clerk will help you fill it out. The clerk then draws a number or name, and that is the judge that you go before. That is an associate circuit judge. The associate circuit judges are lawyers the same as the circuit judges, only to the extent that their salary is less than the circuit judges. However, I believe the associate circuit judges now receive a salary of $45,000. It has always been my thought that it's rather an expensive situation to have a judge who receives $45,000 a year to be hearing cases that involve $100 or $200 in total. I never was 100% in harmony with the new judicial system, but I must admit that it has worked out rather successfully. I feel and will always feel that we ought to have a system where that the judges, and particularly associate judges, were not called upon to handle, decide, and determine such small items as I have just referred to. But the system, as I say, is functioning very well. I would point out, however, to the people in the future that when I started practicing law, we had one circuit judge for the county of Macon, which handled all matters which were directed to the circuit court. We had one county judge who handled, to a great extent, probate matters and dependency and delinquent matters, plus the justices of peace, which I have referred to. Now we have in Macon County and servicing Macon County only, we have four circuit judges and four associate circuit judges. So we have eight judges servicing particularly Macon County. However, they're eligible to be handling matters in any county if they are directed there, so that the legal work in Macon County now, as compared to when I started, is tremendously greater. The courts are busy every day, and that means that we can have eight courtrooms handling legal matters of participants at the same time. And as I point out, that wasn't true when I started practicing law.
Do you think people rely too much on the legal system?
I think that the general public take it all for granted. And I don't think anybody can dispute that it has been an improvement, a very substantial improvement, because the lawyers that are elected or selected circuit judges or associate judges, first are lawyers, and they have had to go through law school and obtain their license to practice. So they would naturally be better qualified than just the man on the street who was elected justice of the peace. My only fault that I find is that it seems to me that it is too expensive to have these small matters handled by a judge whose salary is as they are. And I personally, of course, would like to see the system corrected so as to make arrangements for some, whether he's a lawyer or a layman, to handle small matters at a substantially a greater, or substantially a lesser amount of expense.
You think more cases could be settled out of court?
Well, now, on that point, it was always my policy and the lawyers that I dealt with back in the years gone by, I believe that we tried to and did settle more matters in our offices than are settled in offices today. However, my feeling about that could be incorrect because the volume is so much greater today. But I recall, and I want to mention this because he's, over the years, he's been a personal friend of mine, and I think I've been a personal friend of his. Emmanuel Rosenberg and I, his name is shortened by the word Manny instead of Emmanuel, practiced through our early periods of time and had a great many matters, a great many family matters where we were on adverse sides. And I know that our experiences were to try to settle matters, particularly where children are involved. My own personal feeling is that the divorce law as of today is a mockery. I've been opposed to it since they attempted to make it so easy for people to get a divorce. I'm opposed to that. I think the children suffer. It doesn't make too much difference between the man and woman if there wasn't children involved. And they are the ones that are suffering, and I have difficulty believing that many situations are made better by a divorce. We have a problem of support for children and so many divorces are being granted. It's shocking for me when I see and read about the number of divorces are being granted. And now today, if you sneeze at your wife or she sneezes in your presence, then that's nearly grounds for divorce. They walk into court, they used to have witnesses who testify about real facts. Now they don't have to have facts, they just walk in and they get mad at each other and they're ready to go to divorce court. And the children have not a word to say about it, and the children are the ones that suffer. So I want to be marked down as being an old-time lawyer who believes that whoever conceived the idea of making divorces so easy, that I'm an individual who thinks that procedure is crazy and it should be tightened up. It's gone along now long enough to prove that it hasn't bettered conditions at all, and particularly it has not bettered conditions for children. I heard the president's speech of last night and he referred to the fact that there were something had to be done about the men, fathers of children, who weren't paying for their support. I believe that we have a shortage of the law to protect the child of divorced parents, and I think more thought and more effort should be put into making the procedure more effective so that the parents can be made, even after divorce, to care for their offspring.
Maybe now we could talk a minute about the city of Decatur. You've seen many changes in the city, haven't you?
Well, as I mentioned to you before this session, one of the important changes that happened or occurred in my lifetime was the fact that we used to have as transportation equipment called Interurbans, and the Interurban station in Decatur was immediately north of the property that I now have and the property at 227 South Water Street. I would like to mention that because going to law school, every morning at 5 o'clock I left on an Interurban for Bloomington. It took 2 hours to get from Decatur to Bloomington. I would arrive in Bloomington at 7 o'clock and go directly to law school. And I did that for 3 years, or the greater part of 3 years. Later on, I had the benefit of an automobile in the last year of my schooling. Now we have a parking lot where we used to have the Interurban station, and of course across the street where we now have the county building. When I started practicing law, we had a building that sit at the corner, the southeast corner of Wood and Water Streets, which was our courthouse. It was a three-story stone building. We had to the south part of it a portion that was used as a city jail, and to the east of the courthouse was a building that was the sheriff's residence. The sheriff lived there, and back of the sheriff's living quarters was the Macon County Jail. That building, of course, is no longer there and hasn't been for a number of years. And we have the new courthouse, which is now too small for the demands upon it. I think of the territory where I lived, down on the South Franklin Street district, down near where we called the bridge across the river, the Sangamon River, as the county bridge. It was a covered bridge, and I recall very distinctly the building of the present dam we have. And when I was a young person, we did not have the lake, we had just the Sangamon River, and all or a great portion of the north side of the of Lake Decatur from Franklin Street over to Maffitt or Jasper Street, that was all low land. The river, Sangamon River, circling around over to the south, and I might say that when I was a young person, I carried the Decatur Review newspaper, and one of my customers was a person who lived in a house which would if it was in existence now, would be about in the middle of Lake Decatur at the extension of South Broadway Street. So the lake, of course, has been a big change within my lifetime and within the lifetime of a great number of people, because it's been in existence for quite some years. One of the things that used to happen with the young fellows down in my end of town was they would get on the banister of this county bridge that I've mentioned and dive off into the Sangamon River. I remember one year that the river froze over so solid that we had built a bobsled, and we got a car out on the Sangamon River, an automobile, and one of the young fellows drove it, and we had ropes tied onto the automobile and had our sled and our skates, and the automobile pulled us up the Sangamon River. That I wouldn't do at my age now. I think there's been a great many changes in the east part of the city of Decatur in my lifetime, and of course the Staley Company, the Staley office building, is a big addition. We're having publicity at this time about whether the viaduct over 22nd Street should be torn down or should be transferred to another location. When I was a young fella, my father used to hire a horse and buggy, and he used to take my mother and I a ride, and we'd go out to, past the Staley building. At that time, 22nd Street was known as 7th Street. And we used to cross the railroad tracks, some 10 or 15 tracks, where the viaduct now is. And that was, at that time, was more or less the extreme east part of the city of Decatur. It was all vacant land to the east of there. And of course, buildings such as the Masonic Temple, and we have several new churches in the city, and all of the new industry out in the northeast part of the city. That's all come about during my lifetime. I'm mentioning the Lake Decatur. When I was a young fellow, we had a bridge across the Sangamon River. We called it the Maffitt Street Bridge, and then there was another bridge across the river called Lost Bridge. Both of those have long been out of existence. And then, of course, up in Raised Bridge territory, I have happened to have in my office a picture of the railroad bridge across the Wabash Railroad Bridge across the river, Sangamon River, and of course the Interurban tracks, Interurban that went to Champaign and Danville across those tracks, and that is now out, that bridge is still there. It's out in near Ferry's Park. And Ferry's Park, of course, is something that has been established within my lifetime. We don't have much industry to the west part of the city, but we have a great deal of residential districts that weren't there when I was a young man. When I think of the west part of the city of Decatur, I remember very distinctly when the West Main Street Hard Road was built from Decatur to Harristown, and I happened to be an employee working on that, the laying of that road back when it was put down. It was the first, I believe, first concrete road out of Decatur. Then to the north, of course, the north has greatly grown, mostly in commercial and residential districts. When I think about it, when you think of the highway that goes through Decatur at I can't offhand it here, think of the street. Anyway, the north part of the city of Decatur in my younger life was possibly south of St. Teresa High, St. Teresa Convent. The high school, of course, has been built some years ago, but it's reasonably new. Then you have all the buildings along the route from Decatur to Springfield and from Decatur to Champaign, all commercial industry to the north of Decatur. That's all, of course, new. The town did not cover near the territory that it does today. Shopping centers have all come in being during my lifetime, and during my later lifetime, incidentally, I believe our first shopping center was the one that's out on West King Street and west of Route 48. I can't recall. Fairview Avenue, yes. I can't recall of a shopping center that's older than this one out there. But I guess there are things of the future, and there's been a tremendous amount of money expended in building those types of commercial property. Everything has been modernized. When I think back, when I was a kid, the first automobile that was ever in my family, my father bought, and it was a 1916 Ford touring car. It was not, it had side curtains that you put on if it's raining or if it's cold weather. The cars are constructed so much differently today, and they have been for years. But it seems as though there's been, I tell people that I believe that we have lived during an interesting period in the history of the world. I have some friends that are about my age, and incidentally, I have told you my age, I believe, or my birth date. I am getting on the closer side between 81 and 82. I will be 82 years of age on June the 27th of 1984. There have been tremendous changes. The automobile has come in to where now people don't have to have one automobile. I have one daughter who's married, had two boys that are of age and working. Each one of them have an automobile, and my daughter and husband have an automobile. So there's four automobiles to serve four people. I have another daughter who has four automobiles. One is with a daughter in college, and three or two are at home, and they have trouble being able to get everybody to the place where they want to go. And the third daughter has had three cars until one of them was damaged, so it's out of commission right now. And there's four in that family, and they only have two cars, and it's most difficult for them to get everybody to the place where everybody wants to be at the proper time. So we don't need to say that we need an automobile. Depending on the number in the family, that determines the number of automobiles we have to have. Nobody wants to walk. So I think I've lived in an interesting period in life. I've enjoyed life. I don't take too many things serious. If I do take something serious, I'm real serious with it. I am confronted with a very serious matter now that I will not discuss, but I'm very firm in my position, and it affects some people who I have felt that I was very close and friendly with. I think maybe I'm a little stubborn. I have tried to build my life on a reputation of honesty. I never claimed to be the best lawyer. I always wanted to be just an ordinary human being. I've always wanted to be an ordinary lawyer. I have always been or tried to be honest. I despise a liar. You cannot cope with someone who lies to you. There's no way to be on even terms if you're dealing with a dishonest person. Now in my late years, if I can always be remembered as Jim Henson, who was honest and trustworthy, I will feel that my life has been a success. I try very definitely to be friendly with my daughters, their husbands, and my grandchildren. I hope that I conduct myself in the years to come, as long as I live, so that my secretary can say that I was honest in my dealings. I can sing her praises for reasons that I will not discuss, because they would involve personalities that I don't choose to have discussed. But she has been very helpful to me over the past 2 years, and she is a very competent an efficient secretary.
Perhaps we should give her name. Would you like to give her name?
Well, I would, if I gave her name, and I will, without her permission, I'll give you her name. Her name is Sarah Patton, and she is the wife of Circuit Judge Jerry Patton. Mm-hmm.
As long as you were giving her such a compliment, I think that there should have been a record.
Well, it's an honest compliment, and it's a true compliment, and I I have been fortunate over my years. So many times I've been fortunate. Maybe I've been lucky. I've had some physical difficulties. I have some now, but at 82 years of age or 81 years, you're supposed to have some. I tell people that as of now, I can't see, I can't hear, I wear a pacemaker, I'm a borderline diabetic, and outside of that, I'm in pretty fair health.
You're just fine.
I am, that is not a true statement. I had difficulty. I had cataracts on both eyes, and I was down to the point that my secretary had to read to me instead of, I couldn't read a letter, I couldn't read the newspaper. I was sent to St. Louis, and I had surgery on both eyes, and I believe now I can see as well as I ever saw in my life. So I think I've been fortunate about that. I've been very fortunate. I had good parents. My wife's folks were very good too, she and I. And I like to sing the praises of my daughters who have been fine to me. They wait on me and look after me. I've got a lot of help.
Well, good. Well, Mr. Henson, it sounds as if you've had a wonderful life.